Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back everybody once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 15 for September the 24th, 2013. How's everybody doing out there's work week? Hopefully everything's going well for you. I know at our work has been extremely busy and just out of this world, extremely busy. And everybody in our line of work, when you're working with servers and you're working with all this kind of gear and you're the network admin or the systems admin, we found out one thing. Everybody's problem is the most important. And I tell my crew this when we go in the morning, we talk about this stuff. We have our morning meetings. I say, look, if somebody can't print, that might not be a big deal to us because they can print in 90 different places. But if they can't print, well, what happens then is that, you know, that's a big dilemma for them. Anyway, let me start off first here before we ever get any further than that. This is episode number 15. Please check out my website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com, to comment on these shows. I know a few of you already have, and I do appreciate that. Also, you can send me some questions you may have or suggestions for future shows. You can call my voicemail at 724-701-0911, or you can simply use Skype and go to Jack's Tech Corner. All one word. That's my Skype handle, Jack's Tech Corner. And just bring that out there and or drop me an email to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And we do have one listener tonight that did send me an email, and I want to thank you for that. We will be reading that at the end of this show, and we're going to be getting into a few of the topics here tonight. But again, before I get started, we're elaborating on that. Where you know how that is. If you have somebody out there and they're trying to type a document, Microsoft Word is giving them trouble. They can't get to their storage drive or the server drive. There's something wrong with that. There's a privilege wrong or something. You know, they want us to drop everything and go running to them. And we've been having this trouble. We've been fighting this dilemma now. We've had people say, you know, I can't teach if my projector doesn't work. How did people teach years ago before we had projectors? One person said, I can't teach unless I get these apps on my iPad. Well, how did you teach before you got an iPad? You know, these are the questions that I have, but this is my dilemma where I work. Where you work, it could be anything. You may work in a drafting firm. You may have a drafter out there going, wow, how can I do my drafting if I can't print to the plotter? I know the other three plotters print, but you might have to walk across the room to get to those. And that is the nature of our business, where we get very, very busy because everybody else has these major problems that they're worried about. But what they don't realize, folks, is us, we together, as systems administrators, network administrators, IT directors, we have a bigger thing to worry about, right? That's called our network. We have to worry about the network. We have to worry about our servers. We have to take care of all this stuff because nobody else is going to do our job. That's for sure. At least we hope not, right? So we have to maintain everything. We got to watch our virus scans going out. We got to watch our data use. We got to watch our internet traffic. All this stuff. And then somebody calls us, I can't print. You're like, you can't what? I can't print. Not a big deal to us, but a really, really big deal to your end user. And we treat every one of our end users as one of our clients. Just if you have a consulting business. I do some consulting on the side. I know a few of you have contacted me and said, Jack, can you help us out and work on a server? And I've remoted in. By all means, I can do that. We have a great way of getting into your computers using TeamViewer or some of the other remote clients out there. And we come in and we'll give you a hand. Very, very inexpensive, but I've done that a lot for people. And we see these folks, even though we work in one area, they all know us as our clients or as the client. And the individual client needs that kit glove. They need that little soft touch, if you will, from you guys and girls out there. So with that said, That's my preempton strike for the night. That gives you something to think about and say, wow, Jack does have a point. You don't like it, but there is a point to that whole thing. So tonight we're going to be talking about two things. One is, how do we get software set up on our server? So many admins out there, I still see this, and it just makes me cringe. I just want to crawl under a brick somewhere and just hide. Because they still want to take that disk out. Tonight we're just going to talk about Office because it's just an application. This could be any application. But they want to take that disk out and they want to stick it into a computer and they want to install the software. Guys, girls, that's old school. Okay, we don't do that anymore. And there's a reason we don't do that anymore. It's because it's time consuming. We have no time. Unless you're fortunate enough to work in one of these industries. A buddy of mine just got a job at a bank. His job is replacing fiber optic network cards. That's all he does. So he may get a call a week, two calls a week. That's his job. Where we work, we are the network administrators, server administrators, the network guidance, we're the educators, we're the duplicators, we're the installers, the X-stallers, the installers, you know what I mean. The jack of all trades. Thank goodness my parents named me Jack because it fit really, really well. But if you're a few man shop like we are, then you need to find shortcuts, okay? Or even if you just want to save time and save your time and give yourself time to sit in your server room and watch Netflix. I'm just kidding. You need to actually be able to do this stuff. So what we're talking about tonight, first of all, is installing software and doing an administrative install. A lot of people never even heard of this, and they talked to me, and I mentioned this to my workers or my interns coming in from colleges, and they're like, Jack, what are you talking about? They didn't show us this in college. Well, of course they didn't. They want you to go out old school, take that disk out, get it all scratched up, and that's old school. We don't do that when we have networks and we have storage and we have servers. You just don't do that. It's not the proper way to do things. So anyway, anyhow, the proper way to do it is to do an administrative install. We do that by simply putting the disk in. Now, when you put an Office disk, and I'm talking about putting this in your workstation, all right? Don't put the disk in your server, and beside you virtualize anyway, right? Yeah. So if you virtualize, there's really no DVD ROM drive or CD ROM drive to stick that disk in anyway. So here's the basic steps to doing this install. And we'll talk about in a few minutes why. This is going to make a lot of sense to you in just a few minutes. The first thing you're going to do is you're going to create a shared file folder on your server. Okay. I don't care what server this is. It has to be a server that Active Directory has access to, because we have to give privileges to this folder, and we have to allow all users to have access, at least read access, to install this software. Well, you're going to install it, but you can install this from a user account then. Or at very least, you want to at least have full administrative access for you on this folder. Now, what we're going to do next is we are going to create that folder. And I like to create mine based on whatever software packages. This makes it very, very easy. We make a top-level folder called Software. Again, very simplistic. The next folder down is Office, and put the version number. We found this very early on that you should have the version number on there. And the reason that is because we have Office XP, we have Office 2000, we have Office 2003, Office 2007, and we have Office 2010. Yes, we did not buy, or we don't have Office 2013 yet, because we didn't find the need for that upgrade, so we don't have that right now. But when we first started setting these up, we made a folder called Office. Well, that didn't work. Now, inside of Office, I guess you could put the versions, but I'd rather put Office XP, Office 2000. And in our type of facility, when you work for a school, you use those different licenses for as long as you possibly can. And, you know, the kids are very resilient. They'll type in whatever you have out there to type in. So we allow that to happen. The only place we have to have the current Office, or close to the current as we can be, is in our computer labs where the teachers are teaching Office. We have to teach the current version. So you have your folder set up. Again, your permissions. Now, these permissions are very important. For the user, for general users on your network, domain users should be read-only access. All right. And we'll get to why in a minute. Next, your other user, your administrative user, you will have full access to that folder because we have to write files to that folder. We're going to do that now. So we put the Office disk in our client computer. Again, this is your Windows computer on your desk. You put it in there and you go to the D drive or wherever. You just navigate to the setup, and in the run command where it says setup.exe, put a space in, put a forward slash and put A. That's an administrative install. You're telling the setup, and a lot of people don't even know this about Office. They don't even know you can do this, but you put a slash A, and when you do that, there's going to be prompted for some questions. It's going to build a new install package, and we're going to put it in that folder on that server. Okay, that's why this is all very much key. This is very important to do. What we found in the long run, we have a lot, like I said, a lot of interns come through, and the more people that handle that disk is valuable, right? I mean, come on. Well, we pay, and I don't know what the general public pays or what the general industry pays for that disk. The schools, we pay for the media, okay, just the media CD or DVD now. We pay $24 for that. So I don't know what you guys pay, but anyway, that disk is precious cargo. You don't want to get that all scratched up. There's no reason for that. Doing this administrative install and building this install set, that allows us to take that DVD, we put it back in the wrapper, and we tuck that away for safekeeping. Just in case we ever have to do this again, we blow a server drive or whatever, we have to rebuild this installation, we would have that to do that with. So you're going to go ahead and you're going to click on Run. The first question it's going to ask you is, where do you want to install this installer package to? Where do you want this package to be placed? And you're going to have it on your folder. So what we had is, we have Office, let's say for instance, if you have Office 2007, you may in fact want to put two folders under there, 32 and 64, in case you want to do the 32-bit install or the 64-bit install. That's totally up to you. We just have one install we do. We create the install, and it's going to say, where do you want it? And we tell it what folder to go into. Very simple. The next, since we're creating a custom admin install, it's going to ask you for the key number. This is really, really large for us because now if we're out at a workstation and we want to sit and install Office, we don't have to look for the key, have to worry about trying to file on one of our servers and type the key in. We don't worry about that because the key's built into the install. It makes for a very, very easy install. It's flawless when you get this done, folks. Another thing you can tell when you're doing this custom install is, what do you want loaded on that client computer? You know, because a lot of people, like we in our industry, we don't use Microsoft Outlook, so we uncheck that. Why make that image any bigger than you have to make it? And we'll talk about images again down the road. I did one on the podcast. It was pretty popular about cloning computers. And we'll talk about some imaging software we use later on. But anyway, it makes that image smaller. And that's key when you're trying to hold those images on external drives or wherever, that you want those to be a little smaller. Next, once you have this all installed and ready to go, it's not going to install anything on your workstation. All it's going to do is make the installer package on that server. Then you can actually set this up in group policies, and we can distribute our software through group policy. It works extremely well, and you can say, look, when you see this workstation come on the network, when it's successfully logged in by a user, that's why the user has to have read access to that folder, it will do an install. It will pull the install files and install it on that workstation, and you're good to go. So that's a nice way to do it. Just another way, you know, if you don't want to have to go out and do the installs yourself, it's another way you can do it. We still like the image because my feeling is when you start pushing, especially the beginning of the school year, when we have 700-800 computers coming online, if you're pushing that out, guess where your network goes? Yeah, you're right. The network kind of goes down the toilet. So you have to have a really good backbone and know you have the bandwidth through your switches, through your routers, through whatever you're pushing this through your network, and make sure that you're going to have the bandwidth to push all this software out, because it's some pretty big packets, okay? So very much up to you how you want to push this thing out. So that is how you do an Office setup, an administrative setup. So you're building an administrative install package. Okay. So with that said, let's move on. So now we're going to talk about what we were working on today. Okay. This is key because this is huge, especially if you're in a school district. If you're listening to this and you're in a school, and I know a lot of schools out there do listen to me because they know that's what I do for a living. I work in a school. And the things that we run up against are the same things you guys are running up against, I'm sure, is the school-type environment. Now, this is not to say that if you're in business, you need to shut this podcast off now and go about your day. You need to listen to this because it's very important for you also. And it's important because we're going to be talking about Google Cloud Printing, all right, and what that is. We worked today for about 3 hours, and the reason we worked for 3 hours is we had to come up with a solution. We started buying Chromebooks, and we talked about this, I think, on a previous show, but we started buying the Chromebooks for our students, which are great. The teachers love them. We have no trouble with accessing the students' U drives because they're using the Google Docs and they're using Google Drive to keep their stuff. They get 20, I think it's 20 gigabytes or 25 gigabytes a kid now. Amazing. And the teacher said, you know what? These Chromebooks just simply work. That's what we like to hear. They just work. We don't have to deal with any of the daily technology issues with these things. They boot up in 5 seconds. The kids like them because they can get on. The only complaint I had from a student was, you know, they said, Jack, we just don't like this Chromebook because we can't play Java-based games. Well, if that's the only complaint I get, then God love them, right? God love Google because the Chromebook is where it's at. But what we found was we had a very hard time trying to figure out how do you get the Chromebook to print. And we put the printer up on the cart like we've always had it. We used to have a lot of IBM Lenovos. And we would go to the Lenovo and we would install the print driver. We would do it with IP base. We'd type the IP address in. Install the print drivers and we would have the Lenovo or the Windows laptop printing. We'd have to touch all 30 laptops in a cart to set them up to one certain printer. Guess what, folks? If the IP address changes, you have to touch 30 laptops again to change the IP address. Now, a lot of you are saying, Jack, you could do it through group policy and the print servers, and you can. There's ways to do that, but traditionally, we've always done it at the workstation level, so that's just the way we did things. Now, with that said, we knew from our English department that we had to get these Chromebooks to print because English teachers like to see print jobs. That's very critical. That's what they want to see. So we went about it and we set out this morning and we said we're going to make these things print. It's so extremely easy that we were making it so extremely hard. Now there's a couple key things you got to find out. Some things that we didn't know that we knew that we had to dig around a little bit and work with. The first thing was you have to install the printer on the actual server where you have the Google Cloud Print services running. So you're going to have to just do a search for that. Do a search for Google Cloud Print. And you're going to find the actual service that you have to have running on your server. And what it does, it takes the printers. You don't have to do anything in your firewall or anything. It's pretty amazing. It takes the printers and takes their internal IP address. But it takes their name and it makes it accessible across the internet. That's why it's called the Cloud Print service. And what happens is, you install their printer, so we take the IP addresses for each classroom, wherever you want these to print, the libraries, the classrooms. If you're in business, maybe the CEO's office, maybe your secretarial pool office, wherever you may be. And once you have those, you install those printers on that server. You then install the Google Cloud Print services. All right. Or if you already have Google Cloud Print services installed, that's okay. Don't worry about that. Because you can, as you add printers, these things will add themselves to the service, and you're okay. So if you want to do it that way, that's fine. So today we added 3 different printers. Once you do that, you have to go into the printer settings, just like you would in Windows, any Windows computer, and share the printer. Now here's the key. When you share the printer, give it the name that you want the end user to see. So we gave it the room number, because if you're in room 202, if you're in room 585, and you see 585 printer, you're pretty sure you're printing to that room. That just makes sense, because, you know, they are the mighty tech guys, right? And the mighty tech guys set that up, and it just simply works because they know it works. Now, once you set that up, you have to then go back out to Chrome. Now, this is kind of weird, because you open Chrome on that server, and under Chrome, under Settings, and then Advanced Settings, you'll see Cloud Print Services. Click on that, and when you go in there, you're going to see those printers listed. Click on the printer that you want to share, which you're going to share them all, but you can only do them one at a time. Click on the printer and click on Share. Now, here's the trick. This is the part that you have to be careful with, because we try to do things like star at our domain name. We try to put in there just at our domain name, thinking that would share with the whole domain, right? That makes sense. It doesn't work that way. The way it works, now, if you're using Google Apps, now this is if you're using Google Apps. The way it works is, in Google Apps, there's a tab that says Groups in your management console. You go to Groups, and you create a new group. Now, let's say, for instance, if you have a CEO, a CFO, a COO, a CIO, EIEIO, whatever you have in your business, those folks actually have to go, and you may want to just get their email addresses and put them in that box and share that device with them. What we chose to do, being we have so many students in so many areas and we never know where they're going to be. If they're in Bobby's room, they're in Susie's room, and they're in Nurse Sally's room, we didn't want to have to put that email address in each one. There is a checkbox underneath the share with, it's right above the share with, the box where you type in email addresses. It says share with everybody on this domain. Check that box and you are golden. That printer is shared, and just make sure in the box next to sharing it says to print, right? You don't want all those people managing that device. Just click on to print so they can print to it, but they can't manage it or change anything. So again, if you want smaller groups, put their email addresses in there. If you want to just use your whole domain, just simply check that box. Now, this is not just used for Chromebooks, and I don't have my, yeah, I do. This is not just used for Chromebooks. I can take my cell phone right now, Google phone or an iPhone. I could take my phone here, and I could pull up Chrome. Okay, now it doesn't just work for any interface, but if I'm on Chrome, I can pull it up. I can hit the printers, and the printers that we loaded today will show up on here. So if I'm in Chrome, and I want to print, so I click the pull-down menu to print, and I would go to print on my iPhone, and I select, you can probably see it here, if you're watching the YouTube video, it says Google Cloud Print. If I click on that, it will give me the option to print to those actual printers on our network, because this is cloud-based. Remember that, it's cloud-based. So you can set it up, and you can print to any printer on your network from anywhere you're located. That's what makes it a valuable tool, even if you don't have a Chromebook. Even if you are Chrome on your Windows machine, on your Mac, on your Linux, wherever you have Chrome installed, you can bring it up, click on print, click on cloud-based printers, and you will see those printers available for you so you can print to those. It's extremely valuable. So even if you don't have Chromebooks, it works. I would set up Google Cloud Print on your servers if you're using Chrome. And I hope you are. We can go in a whole segment of why you need to use Chrome. If you're interested in that, drop me an email or a voicemail, and we can talk about that. So at this part of the show, this is a really big show. We've got a lot to tell you about. At this part of the show, we're going to read this email to you. And I think I can give you the guy's first name. We're going to just break his first name down a little bit just for privacy issues. And he wanted me to throw this out there to you, the listeners, and see if anybody has any ideas for this. And as I read through this, I'm going to try to give him my opinions based on what I've read so far. But I'm going to read through it again to you, the listener out there, and see if you can give us any more suggestions. This email is from Ben. It says, "Hello. I recently just started listening to your podcast, Tips from the Server Room. It's nice to hear what other people are doing. I am a server and network administrator for a medical corporation in California. I currently use Meraki, good for you, it's a great wireless unit, for our main office network and VPN, virtual private networking. But because of recent expansions, I am looking into putting a site-to-site VPN tunnel in place. Meraki sells a product that will do just that. It's called the Z1, but I am looking around to see if there is a cheaper approach. I was looking at the Netgear ProSafe FVS318. I wanted to reach out to you and your community to see if you had any recommendations, as I am new to site-to-site VPNs. Meraki says that they support Netgear, Cisco, or SonicWall. I have experience with Netgear, but if there is something else which is much better, I would value that input. Thanks, and thanks to Brian for the email. That's a great, great question. And I'm sure the community out here can probably answer that. By all means, if you want to call in with a voicemail, you can do it at 724-701-0911. Or drop me your answer at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. I'd love to get that in there. Now, Ben, let me give you some of my advice. The first thing, we do use Meraki Wireless in our network. We put it in this year. I've been extremely happy with them. They were supported. Cisco definitely has support because Cisco purchased Meraki, so they are not really one company, but they are definitely a company that's close-knit, let's say that. Cisco is allowing Meraki to run their own business and have their own sales office, and better than anything else, have their own support channels, and that is key. They are amazing with support. Now, I didn't look to see what the Z1 cost, but looking at Meraki's other gear, and we looked at some of their switches, their gear is extremely expensive. But, you know, on the other hand, you do get what you pay for. Now, with that said, when I was in a job where we had a wide area network, we had 5 locations. We brought those locations back in over DSL channels, DSL internet. And the way we did it with Cisco routing is the way we did it. We routed those different facilities back through Cisco gear. It wasn't a VPN, but it was nevertheless a route. And we routed those one-to-one back to us, to our main office, through our T1 lines. I'm sorry, a little brain freezer. Through our T1 lines, and we was able to hook those back in that way. VPN is much easier than routing, because when you're doing site-to-site VPN, you're basically saying, I have one job I consult with now where they have 2 offices, and they have a VPN. And I believe they are using, if I'm not mistaken, it's Netgear. I didn't set that up. That's why I said I'm not sure, but I think it is Netgear. On the one side, they have it set up, and on the other side, it makes a secure tunnel. So that's why Ben talks about a VPN tunnel. And a VPN tunnel is a virtual private network. They consider it to be, if you're watching the YouTube video, I'm kind of using hand signals here, but they consider it to be a tube. And inside that tube, there's a private channel in there, or a private network inside that tube. So for anybody to crack that or hack that network, they have to hack that tube first to get into your private data. So it's kind of like an internet in an internet, if that makes any sense. And that allows that secure channel to be up. I totally recommend using VPNs whenever you're going to connect 2 different networks together. And you say you're in the medical field, and you also said you're in California, but I would believe you're still under the federal regulations of HIPAA. and I do some consulting work for doctor's offices, so I am well aware of HIPAA, and we deal a lot with that. You do have to keep those records secure, especially for transmitting medical records across that, which I'm sure they're going to be doing that. So anyway, Ben, the short side of that is the Meraki is really quality stuff. I don't recommend you buy it because it's very expensive. I think you're doing your due diligence by looking for a cheaper approach. The company you work for should probably give you a raise at that point because you're trying your best, because you can just tell the company to buy the most expensive, but you don't need to do that. So I would say my opinion would be the Netgear I like, and I also like the Sonic Wall. They make really, really good stuff. If you're familiar with the Netgear and you understand it, you know how to use it, best bet is to go with what you know. Or listen to next week's show. We'll see if anybody sends anything in out there, and I hope you guys do. I hope we're building a community here to help each other. That's why I wanted to start these podcasts, Tips from the Server Room. And there's a lot of technology podcasts out there, and I'm glad everybody wants to stop here and listen to me babble on for, you know, half hour, 45 minutes. And I enjoy doing these because it helps me out as a technologist to bring this information out, because I get to relive it, especially when we played with the servers for the last few weeks, and we'll be doing that again, I'm sure. So, again, Ben, thank you so much for that email, and I'm sure we'll get some feedback out there. Some folks will be giving us some feedback and let us know how to help you out even better than that. They'll have some great ideas, and there may even be some open source solutions out there, I'm sure, that you can load up on a computer and maybe use an open source solution. You didn't mention that, but there's a lot of Linux-based distros out there that does VPN, so it might be a solution. Okay, so I'm done talking. That's it. That's the end of the show. Yay! I should have one of those clapping machines. Yay, that's great. Jack's done talking. Hey, you know how that goes. Anyway, but it's always fun to do these shows with everybody out there. I really enjoy it a lot, and have a great time. So thanks for joining me on this podcast. And if you're listening to the podcast and you say, hey, what's that guy look like? You know, jump over to YouTube and check out the video. The YouTube videos do not get a big hit. Actually, tonight I wasn't even going to record this and put it on YouTube, but I figured there's 40 people ever listen to it or watch it, so why not throw it up there? If you guys want to check me out at YouTube, you can do that. Or even not, if you want to subscribe to me on YouTube, better yet, I appreciate the subscription also. If you want to go to the website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com, you can do that. And if you purchase anything from Amazon, by all means, use my Amazon link. That helps the show a little bit, and I appreciate that because we all buy from Amazon. Anyhow, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi 5.2 server, please sign up for one of my online courses. A lot of you have. A lot of you listening to the show already said, Jack, hey, great course, and you're happy with it. And I'm very happy, and I'm glad that you're learning with it. But you can check out my online courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. At the top of the page, there's a link. It says online courses or online classes, I think it says. Click on that, and you can go in there and take a look at those classes. I keep them very, very inexpensive, but yet very high impact to you. And all it is, it's self-paced. If you see my YouTube videos, it's the same type of quality. You watch the video and you take the quiz. It's a short quiz. Take the quiz. And once you complete this, you will earn a certificate of completion, which is a nice certificate. I printed out. I took some online classes and they have you print it out yourself on paper. And that's lame. I print it out on very nice parchment paper, and I will mail that to you in a non-bendable envelope, so you have something very nice to hang on your wall, or you can take that thing and you can put it with your other certificates in your with your resume, make copies of it, and do what you want to do with that. Again, check those out today. I'd love to have you in the course tomorrow, or even tonight after the show comes out, at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. So folks, until next week, have a great work week, if that is even possible. I know we are doing some major CAD installs right now. Maybe I'll talk next week about that, because that's huge. If you've ever loaded CAD or did a CAD install, I'll talk about that next week. We'll talk about, we're doing some imaging of a boot partition on a Mac, the boot camp partition. And I'll tell you how we image that. I found special software that will work with. We can talk about that next week also. This show tonight was not live on Justin TV because when you do a live show, it's just so much stress on me that I decided to pull this show back a little bit, just do a podcast. The live show wasn't getting a whole lot of hits anyway, so we did the podcast. And if you guys are watching on YouTube, obviously it's on YouTube. I like podcasts because I've been listening to them in the car on the way to work. That's really nice to be able to just, it's like talk radio. You get to listen to something you care about listening to. So at least I hope you care about listening to me anyway. Hey, what can you do? And I just recently found out, if you're pulling this down from iTunes, go to iTunes, please, and comment and rate these shows. Because when you comment on a show on iTunes, it will move us up the list. I've never known that before. But help me move up the list a little bit and get one of my shows up there in the tech category so we can be one of the top tech shows out there. And I appreciate that. Not that it gives me anything but share satisfaction. Again, folks, thank you very much. And I will see you back here next week for another Tips from the Server Room. So long, have a great work week, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.